This episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/AFBlues.
You're listening to the Action Figure Blues podcast, episode number 302 for the week of Wednesday the 13th of December, 2017. I'm Eddie, and with me tonight are...
Scott.
Adam.
And Ben.
This episode is brought to you by Audible, Mike's Comics and Stuff, and actionfigureblues.com. Tonight, our toys of the week are the Sideshow Collectibles Lex Luthor Premium Format Statue, the Bandai SH Figure Arts Dragon Ball Z Nappa, and the DC Collectibles Harley Quinn Deluxe Bombshell Statue. G'day, 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 g'day. How's it going, guys? Another week.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. I'm good.
That's
good.
Nah. He's good. Now, the one of you that I think I haven't spoken to in the longest is Adam. So how are you doing, Adam?
I am pretty well. You almost kind of had a chance to talk to me in person, really, the other day, because I was in your fair city for under 24 hours, as I went and saw Paul McCartney.
How was it?
Yeah, it was awesome. So
excellent.
I expect I will never, ever see him again, and hence I made the most of my opportunity to get down there while he was still alive and still touring.
Cool.
That's very awesome.
Cool. I think half the people that I know seem to make their way to that concert for that very same reason. So that's how I didn't even realize. I don't know if you posted about it on the social medias, but my whole Facebook wall is pretty much people at Paul McCartney at the moment. So it would have blended in if you did.
Yeah. No, one of the guys at work went to both Melbourne concerts and the Brisbane concert because he and his daughter are both majorly into Beatles and other old music, so he's
and other old music.
Probably, yeah, he's probably sick of seeing the exact same set though by now, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. There's certain stuff that you just can't skip.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, next time you got to let us know though that you're here.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had time to catch up really. But it was a case of.
Make the guy feel special, why don't you?
It was get to hotel, spend a couple hours working on laptop, go to concert, get up next morning, spend a couple hours working on laptop, go for a run at ridiculous o'clock, and then catch flight home since I didn't book leave.
You could have ran to Eddie's place.
Yeah.
Doubtful.
Yeah.
Ambitious.
Even for me. Yeah.
I'm end of the train line, Ben.
I'm just trying to make Adam feel bad because, you know, you guys are reviewing Nappa.
Yeah.
That's right. You could have done it together.
Yeah. Live show. Could have set up the stage with All Star.
Adam and I have recorded a show together.
We have.
Yeah.
Of this show or a different show?
Because you got so much time.
Yeah, no, it was Sex in the City. Just like, yeah. No, it was just once when I was in Adelaide for work and then we organized to have dinner and we're like, well, why don't we do it together? So we did it in probably the room that Adam's sitting in right now with his awesome audio setup.
Yep.
Yep. Love you, Adam.
What about you, Ben? Have you had any visitors recently?
I have not. No, I'm just counting down to the end of the school year, and the kids are in that sort of end of term, end of year phase where there's school concerts and aquatic days and class parties, and it's just like every day there's something different. So, and I'm on, you know, sandwich duty because it's not good enough. It's not good enough that you get a note home that says, oh, they're having their class party on Friday and could you just bring something? It's actually, could you bring insert food item here? So you don't even get, you know, actually get told what to bring. And I was lucky enough to get a plate of sandwiches. And given it's one of those very food conscious schools, there's obviously no nuts, no eggs. They don't have convenient refrigeration facilities, so you can't do meat and cheese and stuff. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty boring plate of sandwiches, I think.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, well, that was what I was actually thinking. I thought, well, yeah. So
yeah.
That's about it. Pretty exciting stuff.
Hmm. And what about you, Scotty? How you been?
Yeah, good. I made brownies for work tonight because because people don't have enough to do. Right, so it's like, let's do a Christmas bake-off, and every team has to take a turn bringing, you know, morning tea, and I'm just like, oh, shoot me now, seriously. Brownies is, I'm a very enthusiastic cook, but I'm more of a savory cook. Though, I have discovered that I can make an amazing cheesecake from scratch, like the whole thing. But anyway, I did brownies because I years and years ago when I worked at a place where this lady made the most awesome brownies that people would pretty much almost kill each other for. And when she left, or maybe she went on maternity leave or something, she passed on the recipe as her little farewell gift. And so I have it, you know, kind of tucked away in my email, and it's kind of one of those magic, never fail, always good recipes. Mm. So, and I can kind of do it basically, you know, in my head now. So, so that's happening. And then we're entering into this new phase of life where we have teenagers that have stuff on, which means that we're actually getting to spend more time together, just the two of us. And I love my kids, but gosh, it's delightful. So we're actually enjoying a bit more of each other's company, which is quite pleasant.
Right.
Yeah, very, very good. A few date nights here and there, and we've got our 26th wedding anniversary. What?
Ooh.
I know. Eddie's not even that old, is he?
Like, no.
Coming up in December, so we've worked out where we're going to go, and it's all very exciting.
What anniversary is that?
Gosh, I don't know. So, plastic 25 is, yes, 25 is silver, right? So I remember. So in the little local newspaper that I used to deliver when I was a kid, they used to, one of the things that they would print was like photos of couples for their silver/25th and 50th/gold wedding anniversary. And I remember looking at the, you know, silver wedding anniversary people when I was a kid, just going, oh, those people look so old. Like, oh man,
nice work.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? And like, I don't feel old, but there you go.
You're always old to me.
Thanks, Eddie.
That's okay.
Speaking of young whippersnappers,
I've been good. I had I was actually on a comic talk panel for a charity, which was after a free screening of the Justice League movie that was very good, and I didn't make an idiot out of myself, so I was very proud. Of that. According to me, yes. That's the only opinion that matters. So that was very good. And if anyone's seen the film, it was a very great film to discuss and talk about its many aspects. And apart from that, I've been on a bit of a health kick recently. So I am on a no refined sugar attempt for week, basically leading up to the work Christmas party. And I have been, we were also training newbies at the moment. and I have not been my general welcoming self. I've been more like Dr. Cox from Scrubs dealing with newbies than my regular way, and mainly just because I would make out with a hobo just to try and steal a Tic Tac out of their mouth at this point.
I'd pay for the Tic Tacs to see that.
Yeah. Apart from that, good. And what about toys? Have we picked up anything, Adam?
I have to talk about quitting sugar because it's one of my favorite things to talk about. People quitting sugar seems to come hand in hand with becoming absolutely obnoxious, and only being able to talk about the fact that they've quit sugar and how everyone else should quit sugar and how great they feel when they're obviously totally miserable. So, you've automatically become a horrible person, which is sad.
Okay. Promise you I won't be talking about how great I feel. It is not.
So, just to clarify, we're back to ragging on Eddie because we haven't done that for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You see our texts?
He's young. He just shakes it off.
Yeah.
Just keep talking, geezers.
No, I'm not. I'm ragging on people that quit sugar, and you just happen to have fallen into that.
I have, and I talked about it too publicly.
Oh my god!
In fact, I did a podcast about it.
Are you serious?
No, it's this one. I was talking about this one.
Okay, quick, let's talk about toys.
Yep. Adam, you grabbed anything this last week?
I had a box arrive from. I think from Big Bad. I think I had something arrive from Hobby Link Japan as well, but I can't remember which was which. Anyway, so I have my Figure Arts Napper, I got my Super Sailor Mercury, my Super Sailor Mars, my Ryoga Hibiki, my Xenoverse Time Traveler, I got my Xenoverse Trunks, and I got the Pat Labor SR-70 Saturn. So I have lots of stuff.
Gesundheit.
Yeah.
Very nice. And Ben, what about you?
I almost bought something. Came very close. I was in Toys R Us and I picked up the I picked it up physically. The Star Wars Black Rey Toys R Us exclusive, where she comes with a plastic rock. And I think the only other difference is her sort of robe is actually mixed media. And it was on special if you had your Toys R Us VIP card, which dropped the price to pretty much just under double what a normal figure was. And I don't know, I just couldn't justify it. There's something wrong with me. I was actually thinking it over instead of just buying it. So I put it down and I picked it up and I put it down and then I went and picked up something for Christmas for one of the tadpoles and then I came back and picked it up and then I put it down and walked out without it. So I don't know. Maybe.
Now, I actually ended up picking it up.
Good
and there is one big difference, and this is a very minor hypothetical spoiler to episode 8, but she also has a cut on her right arm that isn't on the regular one through, and that was actually my reason for picking this up, and most people listening to this have probably seen the film by the time you're hearing this, so this is going to be dated, but I just knew that if somehow that cut on her arm plays any part or is even zoomed in on by a camera at any point, it's going to annoy me in the theater that I didn't pick it up. So it's a pile of red rocks that she sits on, and it really does look like it's just corned beef that they've used for the mold.
Because she's got a cut on her arm, I'm there tomorrow.
Ooh. And the lightsaber's metal, which is nice.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still not 100%
not feeling it.
Yeah.
No, not
yet. And what about you, Scott? What are you feeling?
Oh, my age, mostly. Did I tell you I have a broken toe?
No.
Yeah, I broke my toe. It's really embarrassing when you go to the doctor and they're like, how did this happen? You're like, oh, just walking. Just trying to.
It's a new thing I tried out.
Yeah, just trying to navigate life like a normal human. And, walking barefoot. around the house and caught my pinky toe on a corner and left it there. And and it's, you know, there's nothing they can do like for it. So I've been, this is like nearly 3 weeks ago now. So I've just been hobbling along. But then because, and I'm fully aware this is not a toy, just so, to clarify, and get off my lawn, you damn kids. And so anyway, because then I was walking funnier, even funnier than normal, then I got this fantastic blister. And so like I really legit could barely walk, and I was like, my God, what's wrong with me? So I went to the doctor and I was like, so I've got this broken toe, and then I've got this gigantic blister on the heel opposite, and one of them has to come off, and right now I don't care which. Like just the least messy and easiest to do. And she was like, well, let's tackle the blister. So anyway, but in the toy department, I got my Netflix – no, wrong. Amazon Defenders, Marvel Legends, the comic Defenders, which I believe you've got those, haven't you, Eddie?
I do.
Yeah. Have you got yours yet, Ben? No. Okay. So they're very nice. And I also have got all I'm going to get of the Thor Ragnarok wave. So I got Ares right away as soon as it came out. And then I picked up a Jane Foster after leaving lots because her left arm looked so funky in the box. And then I realized that all of her left arms look so funky in the box. And then the other day I picked up a Hela because I went to buy something else and it wasn't there and I wanted to buy something. And I just thought, well, this is probably – I mean, I know that we have a comic Hela already, but it's in the box that – like I've got that whole set just still in the box. And so I thought, well, this is pretty much the – you know, the masked version could really be a comic Hela. So that's what it's going to be. And that's what I got. On another note, Eddie, you and I were having a Twitter conversation earlier. Not the one about the dwarves. We can't say that. But the
that was a short conversation anyway.
Wow. Okay.
But please send all hate mail to Planned Banter.
Yeah. But we were having a Twitter conversation about some changes to the Patreon model, and we are not a Patreon-funded podcast because that it sounds like a lot of work and we're too lazy.
Yay, laziness! Yay.
But you know, we're fortunate to have sponsors that basically just cover the cost of doing the show, and that's all that we. You know, we're not trying to make a living out of this, but we certainly have a lot of podcasting friends who do use Patreon for support, and Patreon's made some changes to its fee structure that I think are probably not going to be very good for them. And I thought that while it's a bit of a different thing from what we normally talk about, that it was probably worth talking about here. So. It involves math, so do you want to have a go at explaining what it is that they're doing differently?
It does. So a lot of what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give credit to a guy named Jason Wood that's a podcaster and mate over at 11 O'Clock Comics, and he's very good with these sort of business, media, math stuff. So a lot of my information I take from him because he's a very trusted source. And the way that I kind of take it is that with Patreon, people, for those that don't know, people have the ability to donate money towards creators that they like. And in the past, what has happened is when you made a donation to a creator, a certain percent of that donation goes to the app and site Patreon, which I believe was around like there's a 5% cost and then another smaller cost for transfer fees and that. So it worked out to be about 8% of the donation would go to Patreon. And Patreon announced this week that they are not only taking that 8%, but the person making the donation is now going to be charged about 2.5 or 2.9%, as well as a 35-cent fee to basically add more cost to Patreon. Patreon seemed to be trying to sell it as this would allow creators to take home more money than if they were charged the percent of donations. But where I think this is really going to suck, unfortunately, isn't so much the big YouTube kid stars that make millions of dollars off their YouTube channel. It's a lot of the smaller geeky guys that fall under us. There's a lot of great toy YouTubers and podcasters that use Patreon, and it's a lot of those dollar donations that are probably going to be greatly affected by these, because that dollar donation would be going up to around 35 cents, and that seems to be enough that people are going to stop. And this is more than understandable, but might go like, you know what, I was comfortable giving a dollar, but now it's going up more and more. Or if I was giving $2, it's now closer to $3. Like, I might just stop my Patreon here. Or if I'm donating to a few different Patreons, I might just limit it down a bit more. So in the end, they're sort of saying, oh, this will give more money to creators, but really, in effect, it's going to drop off a lot of ones, which does generally affect the content that does come out, or even the amount of content that comes out, which is a bit of a shame. So definitely more than understand anyone who's drops a Patreon. I'm not having any shot if anyone's seen this and like, you know what, I'm going to stop using it. But definitely be kind to any content creators out there if they take an extra week or two before dropping the next.
Yeah, one of the things I think about the Patreon model is that obviously you can make one-off donations, but you can pledge a, you know, like through a subscription model, which then allows creators to have some degree of a guarantee of income. And, you know, I do not understand how, like, I read it all, and there's lots of graphs about how it's going to be better, etc. And then you just read the comments where people have taken the graphs and, you know, just said, so this is what it will actually look like. Like, it's a really, I think, a very, very bad move to, if you, look, I support a few podcasts with, like, a dollar a month, etc. And, you know, the things that, like, if it adds up, like, if I was doing 10 of those, well, then now suddenly instead of doing $10 a month, you know, I'm doing, like, 13 something. It just – it really, really does not make sense. And so I wanted to mention it more just out of solidarity to our creator friends that do use that model, because I think that there are some kind of challenging times ahead as people have to really rethink how they manage that coming up. So get your act together, Patreon. Mm. Boo.
And also just kind of thinking too, because, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't follow what's trending on Twitter and all that. I mean, there might be people who don't know about this and have just noticed their Patreon's gone up by a couple of... We'll, it's when you use a bird to write a note on an oar. It's easy. But yeah, you might not know that things have gone up a little bit and wonder why. So don't also blame the content creators for this, because definitely from what I'm hearing, they've had no say in it, and also there's no way for them to opt out of it. They can't pay the fee for their subscribers, at least at the time of recording this. So there's nothing much they can do about it either, unfortunately.
How rude.
Yeah. Rude. Solidarity, creators.
Okay, well, without anything else to add, let's cheer things up a bit with some toy talk.
If your collecting addiction is a hard itch to scratch, then you might like a bit of insurance that you always have some new goodies on the horizon. Loot Crate is the world's favorite subscription box service, and they're currently offering AFB listeners 10% off any of their flexible subscription plans. Every Loot Crate includes exclusive apparel and collectible items built around a theme, and there are so many theme crates to choose from, whether you're into a more general pop culture or gaming theme, or you have a more specific interest. To save 10% on any new subscription, go to trylootcrate.com/AFBlues and enter the promo code BREACH10. If you do sign up and you love your loot, be sure to go to the AFB Facebook page and post a pic of your new gear. That's trylootcrate.com/AFBlues with the promo code BREACH10.
Now it's time for one of our feature segments, Toy of the Week. Each episode, we take turns looking at one toy or collectible in detail. These might be new releases, or we might talk about a favorite or bizarre item from our collection, but usually it's a new release. This week, Ben has our first Toy of the Week, so over to you, Ben.
Well, thank you, sir. I mentioned last week when Scotty and I were having a bit of a chat that I received my Lex Luthor premium format statue from Sideshow Collectibles. So that is my Toy of the Week option for this week. It is a 2017 release, and I picked it up in 2017, in fact, just a couple of weeks ago. Now, Scotty, I mentioned last week that I thought Luthor had actually taken the gold medal for the longest transition from order to arrival, but you know me and my OCD, I actually had to go and I did look it up out of curiosity, and from the time I ordered Lex to the time that he arrived was 6 weeks shy of 2 years, and Conan still holds the record at being 2 years and 2 weeks. So
wow.
There you go. So, yes, so Lex was placed – I placed my order for Lex Luthor on the 23rd of January 2016. He was actually meant to be out for Christmas 2016 and then got delayed to March, then got delayed to August, and he probably does hold the record for the number of times I've received an email from Sideshow to say this item has been delayed. There is some complexity in this statue that I think justifies it a little bit, because it is a pretty challenging piece just looking at it. So, all right, getting into it, quarter scale, premium format, no mixed media here, pretty obvious when you actually have a look at it. He's a big dude. He clocks in at 26 inches or 66 centimetres, and I'll probably say this now because I'll forget later. He does actually pair up extremely well with the Superman premium format. I know you didn't want to hear that, Scotty, but height-wise, they really good effort in terms of keeping the two together. So very nice there. Now, when he was originally solicited, he was US$530, which at the time seemed like an exorbitant amount of money. That was way above what most premium format statues were going for. But by today's standards, you know, it's actually almost kind of normal. Look, so this is nothing really unusual in terms of the packaging. It's a typical split styrofoam that you'd expect with Sideshow. The art box, there's not really much I can say. It kind of looks like they've used graphics that are inspired by the power armor itself, which, it's okay for what it is. Nothing really to talk about. Interesting, Scotty, you mentioned a couple of weeks ago about double boxing. Mm-hmm. And Lex Luthor has the same deal going here. He is double boxed. Not only is he double boxed, but he's got those little foam thingies in the corner too, the spacers, so that the box effectively floats inside another box. So he's kind of triple boxed, really. It's impressive indeed. So you've got the art box in a brown box, inside a shipper box with the spacers. So Sideshow definitely taking no chances whatsoever. Probably doesn't help with all that extra packaging because this is one seriously heavy statue. It is a solid base and it is a solid figure. And picking the two up together is quite the effort. It's a bit of a beast. All right. Well, now, Lex Luthor, you might think of Lex Luthor as a guy in a suit. This is Lex in his power armor, that famous purple and green armor that has been through many iterations over the years. I don't think this one is from any particular kind of issue. I think they've just used various renditions over the years for inspiration, and I think they've done a pretty good job with the version that they've chosen. All right, so sculpt, getting it out, base first. very nice. Yeah, I didn't really notice the base too much when I ordered it. It just looked like a bit of an industrial sort of themed setting. I'd say it's something that's atop sort of LexCorp tower or something like that. It's got a bit of that sort of Art Deco feel, sort of industrial, lots of steel with the Luther Corps logo on it. Interestingly, most of the detail on the base is actually at the back. There's a lot of really sort of intricate bits and pieces and pipes, which are kind of odd, really. I thought it would have been the other way around. But, yeah, look, it's actually quite simple and to the point. I quite like it. I'll talk a little bit more about it later. But no peg hole for that right foot that's up and resting on the big sort of L for LexCorp. There's just a hole in the sort of cylindrical part of the base. Very, very big. Foot peg, in fact. Now, when you take Lex out, he's pretty much complete. So that left arm that he's got behind him, resting against kind of the lower part of his back, is all permanent. You notice straight away that he's missing a right hand and he's missing his head. He's also missing most of his chest, which I'll get to a bit later. So that foot peg, I'm on a bit of a roll with Sideshow. My last few pieces have all gone to plan in terms of foot pegs in holes. If you've listened to any of my reviews in the past, you'll know what a disaster that can be at different points. So, yeah, very nice. Slots in, balances quite well. Really nice fit with that left foot going into the cylindrical part of the base and then the right foot just balancing nicely on top of that sort of metallic L as well. So anyway, he goes in. Now, the armor, I think, is fantastic, and that's what actually put me over the line to ordering this one. I'm not a regular Superman reader, sort of on and off over the years, depending on creative teams, etc. But there's just something fun about this kind of power armor, and I think the design is actually very, very nice. Now, it's sculpted by Steve Schumacher, who has done a wonderful job. I really, in terms of that kind of, I guess, you know, art direction, I don't have any complaints with the design of the armor. I think it looks fantastic. Now, for me, the best part about this is the Lex head. To me, this is Lex Luthor. This is that sort of big, broad man that we've seen. None of this Jesse Eisenberg rubbish. It's my Lex Luthor. And best of all, the sculpt on that head it's perfect, absolutely perfect. He's got that really kind of arrogant semi-smirk on his face. I think they've just nailed it. I'm really pleased with how it came out. The only thing I find a bit odd about, I guess, the art design is his right arm is sculpted so that he's kind of holding, looks as if he's kind of holding something. And if you get the exclusive version from Sideshow, you get a swap-out right hand that's holding a chunk of kryptonite. If you just get the regular version, you don't get the right hand with the kryptonite. You just get a right hand which is in the shape of a fist. And it looks really awkward. It's a really odd pose. He's kind of got this fist raised in the air, and I don't know whether he's just, like, defeated a boss on Wolfenstein or something and he's, like, doing a fist pump in you know, celebration. But it's a really kind of awkward feel. I don't know about you guys, but if you look at that picture of him with just the right hand as a fist, it almost feels like it should have been holding a Superman cape or something like that, some kind of victory piece. Idea. And then they've changed their mind, or maybe it's been cost prohibitive or something like that. It looks like it was meant to be doing something else, because to me it's just awkward otherwise. But when you slot in that right hand, both of which go in really, really well with magnets. Sideshow's been doing very well with their magnets. They snap in nice and tight. The one holding the kryptonite just looks flawless. Like, it looks like it's meant to be there. It kind of complements that arrogant look on his face as well. It's the way it should be. So very, very pleased in the way that comes together. So anyway, choose your right hand, put it in, and then out comes Lex's head. Interestingly, this is actually a painted head. I'm in two minds about this one. I reviewed the new Green Lantern premium format a while back, and I thought that they did a fantastic job with this new kind of cast head where they actually cast it in that flesh-coloured resin or polystone, and it came out really, really well. And you'd think for a guy who's bald and shows pretty much all skin, that head would be a perfect opportunity to replicate that, which they haven't done. They've gone with the painted look, which is, you know, it works. It's good. It's well done. But I just think maybe they've missed an opportunity. So, again, perhaps it was actually a cost factor. So anyway, the head snaps on really nicely. I said the armor is fantastic. It's got a kind of a semi-classic, but then that sort of semi-modern. It's a really nice blend, I think, of all the different renditions of this particular look for him. Now, I mentioned that he has no chest, and that is because the chest actually lights up. So other than the contrasting sort of purple and green, there's a really sort of large yellow kind of hexagonal shape in the middle of the chest. Now, I'm almost 100% certain that when the pre-order went up for this piece, there was no light-up chest, or they hadn't mentioned it at the time. So either that or it was so long ago, I've completely forgotten. But it is a pleasant surprise, and you take the chest piece out of the box, separate piece. You can see where the batteries fit. And the whole thing snaps on to his chest with a magnet.
Nice. Yeah,
it's actually really cool until if you guys can actually see the picture of Lex, there's under his chin where the purple bit is at the top, the button is actually behind there. So you sort of reach up over the light up bit up above the purple, and then the button is actually facing his neck. And it's a little sort of spring-loaded button that you press down to turn on and then press it again to turn off. So it doesn't sort of move left or right or anything. It actually presses in and out. And it looks a bit awkward because it's not quite even, because it is a loose button that can move around. It's also been hand-painted, and it's kind of odd. I've got other light-up statues, and I think they've done a much better job in sort of disguising that switch. So this one's kind of as big as, you know, the fingernail on your little finger. It's a really kind of obvious thing. I mean, it blends in fairly well from a distance. I just don't think it's probably the best execution. I would have much preferred something that you pull the chest out, flick the button, and then put the chest back on so it's well and truly hidden. So, all right, moving on to the actual paint, really no complaints here, not a lot anyway. Look, I think the metallics that they've used really are quite glorious. The green is a beautiful metallic green, whereas the purple doesn't quite have the same metallic effect, and I think they contrast really, really well. There's some nice kind of black bits just sort of, breaking it up a little bit around the abdominals, and in particular in the joints, like in the shoulder joints, the elbow joints. There's a series of really nice kind of cables and hydraulics all sculpted in there, which fantastic. So it's all the little detail here like that, the little seams along the armor and things that really stand out. There's actually quite a lot of detail in the back, which I was quite surprised. I mean, unless you're a collector that puts mirrors behind the statues, you really are missing out on some really, really nice detail sculpted in the back there. The detail's really obvious in places like the gloves, in particular the joints along the fingers. There's no sort of corners cut here. I think, you know, sideshow, I think the delay was worth it. I think, you know, you didn't want to rush this piece. There's some easy places to stuff up. And so they've taken great sort of time and care to get this one right. Paint apps on mine are actually really, really good. The only thing I think is a bit of an odd one, and I'm not sure why, is they've decided to make the suit look worn. So they've gone with it's not quite a battle damage look. It's just like a general wear and tear. So along any kind of obvious edges, they've used sort of like a metallic silver, metallic grey, to just sort of run along all the edges to look like that paint has actually started to wear, and as if the suit was a metallic gunmetal grey, and then they've actually painted the green and purple over the top, and then that sort of exterior colour is slowly being worn off. And that's pretty much all over the whole statue. And so it feels a bit odd because it's so even. There's no really obvious place where it's worn more than others. And if it's kind of battle worn, you'd think that there would be certain parts like those shoulder pauldrons which would actually sort of catch a lot of the damage. And so, yeah, it's a really kind of uniform wear across it, which I think probably wouldn't be the case if it was actually real. And I also imagine Lex would be pretty pretty arrogant in the way, you know, he maintains something like this. I imagine it'd be kept pretty much perfect at all times. So whether he's sort of just returned from somewhere with the kryptonite as his kind of victory, you know, piece, I'm not really sure. So, yeah, a little bit odd there. The paint on the head, you know, I mentioned before, is fantastic. The eyes are really well applied. He's actually looking sideways, so the decals have actually been put on the sort of the left-hand side of his eyeballs, and mine are actually spot on. There's no kind of Marty Feldman thing going on here. So really, really nicely done. A lot of great care taken with this one. It's one of Sideshow's better efforts in years in terms of paint. Nice, big, thick, heavy statue, which I really, really like. There's no eggshell hollow thing going on here. And I think it just came together really, really well. I think it it matches up against Superman. A little bit disappointed now that, you know, hindsight being 2020 and all that, that he matches up so well with Superman, but then their bases are completely different. It would have been nice to sort of have a modern base for Superman to go along with the Luthor one. I think that then they would display even better together. I'm sure someone on the secondary market will probably take care of that, but at the same time, you know, a bit of planning would have been really, really good. So, you know, look, there are a few little bits and pieces there that I guess, you know, a few little niggles. I didn't know that it would have that wear and tear on the armor when I ordered it, so I'm definitely going to take probably half a point off for that one. I think the button's a little bit awkward in terms of turning the light on. The light's actually not all that bright either. I mean, it works and it looks good, but it's certainly not as bright as some of the other pieces that I have. So I don't know whether there was a deliberate choice there or that's just the way it worked out. So look, I think, gosh, you know, there's so much of the statue worked out so well that I feel harsh taking stuff off, but I think I'm going to round this one out and give it 8.5 out of $10.
I didn't pull the trigger on this just because you got to have, you know, some boundaries somewhere. And it's interesting. Yeah. You and I have edited this line differently in terms of, you know, some of the ones that we've skipped. You know, and one of the things that I kind of, it's hard to feel in the photo, is just the head sculpt. I just have felt like maybe his facial features just didn't seem defined enough in comparison to the rest of the figure. So it's interesting, you know, to hear your feedback on that, and that you feel like the head sculpt is really strong. So that's really good to hear.
Yeah, look, I think when I put the links in to the script, I was actually thinking much the same thing. I was looking at the head sculpt going, you know, like, no, I don't know. I just remember it being better than that. So I actually went and had a really, really good look at my statue. You know, it's often when I review these statues, I've already sort of put them together, had a really good play, and then I've left them in the other room. So I did actually go and check it out. And, yeah, like my original – I stuck to my original thoughts, and I actually think the finished – piece is actually better than the prototype. I think they've done a really, really good job on just sort of bringing out that Luthor. So that's a rare one where the factory piece is actually better than the prototype.
A pleasant surprise.
Really indeed. Loving the storytelling in the sculpt, like the expression on his face, as you mentioned, and in particular that hand behind the back, just really denotes the character, which is something fantastic. Yay. But I'm wondering, with the light up chess piece, do you think, as Sideshow has shown they've done a couple of times with repainting premium formats, do you reckon you might get a swap out piece with the Superman symbol and get a re-release of him painted in blue? Do you reckon that's possible for?
Yeah, it's an interesting choice because you know, Sideshow are a bit flaky when it comes to these sort of things. I mean, collectors in particular are not fans of that. But I think if you could change it enough rather than just a straight repaint, then, you know, you tend to get a lot more buy-in from fans than, you know, just taking a Sinestro and, you know, repainting it. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering when you said that chess piece was removable. I was like, oh, yeah, I could see them swapping that, yeah, and that being a big change and then a recolor.
Yeah, I do wonder whether they faced a lot of production challenges in getting this one out the door. So when the last one kind of sailed off, you know, to its new owner, they all sort of dusted their hands and went never again. So.
I have to say that light up pieces in statues are kind of lost on me. I mean, look, I like the idea of it, but particularly if it's not 100% straightforward to be able to flick it on and off, then, you know, it's kind of a thing that you do it when you're putting it together, and then I would probably never do it again.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I had my niece came over, and she brought her new partner, who's a lovely guy, and, you know, he came over and saw all my statues, and he said all the right things and won me over by oohing and aahing. But he was genuinely really interested in the manufacturing process and how they do, and the magnets and this and the swap out pieces. And then when I showed him that some of them lit up, he was really and of course the original Green Lantern sideshow piece with the huge light up exclusive construct of the fist. That one really put him over the line. Like, he was absolutely blown away by that. And then I kind of realized that it's actually the only time that I do the light up stuff is when I show people. So other than that, it's not like you walk past, you know, the room where my statues are and they're all lit up and doing their thing. So
no. It's, I mean, you know, I think it's a cool gimmick. Like, it's a, but I'd hate to be paying a lot more for it.
Yeah. And I think this one, you know, I think given what premium formats were selling for back in the day, you're probably paying an extra $80 to $100 for this guy. So whether you think that level of detail in the armor, having that sort of very solid figure, yeah, it's interesting. Look, I think this is definitely one where you need the X as well. And I didn't mention, sorry, I completely skipped the Kryptonite, which is fantastic because it's actually got a really nice paint job on it that contrasts really, really well with the armor. So it's very matte in the way that it's painted. So they've got a sort of nice subtle stone effect going on compared to the, you know, the metallic, well, I was going to say metallic metal. The metallics of the armor. So, yeah, sorry, completely forgot that bit.
Hey, random question. Did you get the Bane? You got the Bane statue, didn't you?
I have Bane. I just want to review him when Eng is on. So, because John, a.k.a. Engineer Nerd, is not a fan of Bane, so I'm busting to review the statue when he's on the show, but he keeps avoiding me.
Yeah. That's one that if I, you know, was trying to not do all the villains and, you know, had the space, because, you know, my affection for Bane is all from Gail Simone's Secret Six, not from, you know, any previous stuff. But I really did like that statue. But again,
I shall warn you in advance, he is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a sort of thing where, like, if budgets and whatever allowed, you know, having to kind of decide, make adult grown up decisions.
In trouble, Young Storm Eagle has a hidden water cannon that shoots up to 20 feet, but the Cobra Liquidator is making a splash, and the Parasite's launching catapult missiles. G.I. Joe Patriot, Storm Eagle, Cobra, Parasite, and Liquidator sold separately.
I found the Barracuda!
But Duke's gone!
So glad you could join us!
So we have three toys of the week for this episode, but the second toy of the week is a double teamer, and Adam's influence in the Dragon Ball Z world is so much that Eddie has bought this thing, Ben is getting this thing, but the review is happening before Ben gets it, and he's not mad at all. He's probably going to beat you up later, but I won't be there. In the meantime, Adam and Eddie, while you still can, over to you.
Thank you. So we are reviewing the SH Figure Arts Nappa. This is produced by Bandai and distributed by Tamashii Nations. It was released in 2017, and I think both of us therefore have purchased it in 2017. Ben, don't know when yours is going to arrive, so, you know.
Me either.
Yeah. It's probably going backwards and forwards around the world 3 or 4 times like some of your other packages.
No, this was one I definitely wanted to jump on early because he is that sort of larger villain character, and if history has taught us anything with this line is that those guys end up being worth a bit of money once they sort of disappear from the main market. So I am still a bit behind with a couple of characters and still trying to get some down, but this was a guy that I definitely wanted to get on quickly.
Yeah. And he is a big, big figure. He's so in figure art sizes, Broly is the biggest one in Dragon Ball so far, and he's massive. Nappa, I think, would be the next largest. I think he's probably bigger than Android 16, who before this was the second largest one. So this is Nappa in his really one and only look from the Saiyan saga. So he's got his full Saiyan armor on. I guess it's worth noting back in 2012, that long ago, I think, Bandai did show a topless Nappa at a convention. I can't remember what convention it was. And that never got released. So this
now
is...
Was that Nappa using the Broly Buck?
I'm just going to have a quick look at it because I suspect that it might have been because it was very large across the chest. Yeah, I think it probably was because looking at it, it's, you know, Vegeta doesn't quite come up to his – or Vegeta's shoulder comes up to his crotch, which is not the case with this one. So this time Vegeta comes up, Vegeta's shoulder comes up to about his the top of his waist, not the bottom of his crotch. So there's a fair bit of height difference there. And yeah, they probably would have just been reusing the Broly chest area for the previous prototype. So Nappa is Vegeta's traveling buddy and all around good time guy at the start of Dragon Ball Z. So he's a big, bulky, warrior-type dude. He gives you the impression in both the show and just from physically looking at him that he's one of those types of people that actually wouldn't mind being associated with the word bad guy and actually probably tries to encourage that opinion. So for this figure, there are a number of swap-out heads. I think there are 3 alternative portraits. In basically all of them, he looks like a menacing bastard, partly because of his handlebar moustache. In 2 of them, he's got veins bulging out of his forehead. And in the other 2, he is smirking quite a bit. So you've got a bit of facial expression there, but generally a menacing portrait. He's got numerous points of articulation. I think he's got the... the newer groin? No, he doesn't have the newer groin, but he's got a double-jointed hip. He does have ball-jointed ankles, but they're actually a bit of a mess. And the reason they're a bit of a mess is actually the original design of Nappa is that he has basically boots that do not taper, and then he's got these ridiculous rope things around his ankles. So you can actually roll the ankle around quite a bit, but it just does not look good at any angle, really. Thoughts, Eddie?
Mine's not too bad until you're sort of pointing his toe forward, if that makes sense, as if he's about to do like a bit of a ballet trot or that, and then you've got the bit of the gap around the front of the rope to the boot. That looks really bad for me, but if that sort of front part of the rope is touching the boot, then sort of like rolling the ankle on a tilt, or that's actually not too bad.
Yeah, I actually found if you roll it all the way to extremes, it just looks ridiculously painful. So that was interesting. I like that they've sculpted the knees to actually look like a knee. So the actual joint, it's the standard kind of double jointed knee segment. So there's a top joint and a bottom joint. So in other words, it swivels at the thigh and it swivels at the top of the calf. And they've actually sculpted a knee shape out of that, which I think is kind of cool. There's still no rotation sideways, which some figures have, and it gives you a bit of poseability. In real life, you don't have that much rotation through sideways through your knee, so that's not too bad. And they've done the same things with the elbows as well, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm. I do find the shoulder joint to be kind of interesting in the armor there. He's got sort of a, would that be like a double swivel maybe?
Yeah, it is. It's similar to what they've done with basically all of them. I think the difference is that this one, it's actually limited as to how far you can swivel it, and I don't think that's the joint. I think that's the sculpting of the shoulder.
It's hitting against the white on the top.
Yeah, well, it hits against the top of the actual inside of the shoulder, the flesh-colored piece. So if you fold the battle armor up, it's not that it hits the top of the armor; it's that it rolls into the flesh cut, like the inside of his shoulder, so into the torso.
Mm. But I do find it interesting that piece on the inside there is kind of sculpted to look like in other figures, it could just be an extra piece in there for that movement of the joint, but it's kind of sculpted to actually look like it's his body under the armor there, which is a nice touch.
Yeah, that's cool. I know we've had the same thing with the original Vegeta in terms of the battle armor at the shoulder pads that they folded up, but I guess with Nappa it's, because they're a lot larger, it's a lot more evident just how hideous the system is, because it's just a single hinge. And there's a couple of times in the series where, in his brief appearances, where Nappa does do a full shoulder extension kind of backwards to throw a key blast or whatever, or just to raise his arm up before he throws a punch. And this figure just can't get that pose.
It is a shame that hasn't been updated on what is essentially a new buck to get that better movement, because it also it cuts in the, not the middle, but, you know, about a quarter into the actual pauldron piece. So when it is even sort of moved slightly up in that, you can tell there's a definite cut there that's not meant to be in there, rather than even having the whole piece movable.
Yeah, it's an ugly system. I don't know what they could have done differently apart from like a really flexible plastic or vinyl piece or something, but it's a pity.
Mm.
It's the same system on the kind of thigh and groin cover flaps as well, but it doesn't look anywhere near as bad there. The problem there is really just the visual of the hinge doesn't look right, but sure. Mm.
But at least that's the way they sort of move on the show, so.
Yeah.
When posed, it's not bad.
Yep, agreed. This one, unlike Vegeta, the tail is not removable, which I guess is kind of fair enough. Nappa never extended his tail, never lost his tail, although I thought Piccolo did grab it at one point, but I don't think it wasn't extended, it was he just grabbed part of the tail. So that's not a big deal. I found the neck online doesn't rotate much.
I really have to put pressure to get – I'm terrible with my anatomy, but where your collarbones kind of meet, the little tip of that tends to get stuck. And if I push past that and click that in, then I'm able to get fairly full rotation through. But it's just that little piece of plastic isn't exactly the right size. It's just a, you know, quarter of a millimeter too thick to – move past that collar point, Joan point easily.
Yeah. I see what you're doing. Yeah, that does happen. But there's basically no side to side rotation.
Like, yeah,
there's a little fraction of it once you get it past there, but it's nothing worth speaking of at the bait. So this is what we're talking about. The neck is ball jointed at the place it enters the torso, as well as being having a ball joint for the head to attach. I found the ball joint for the head. This is another one of those. I think the original Piccolo and a couple of other ones have had issues where the ball joint moves around too much, and it's hard to actually get the head on it sometimes. And this is one of those. I don't know if you've found that.
I have. It's not as bad as – so the extra heads come on these little peg pieces. that allow you to store them in his plastic tray, which we haven't really gone into the packaging, but if you've brought or heard one of Adam's discussions on these figures, you know what the packaging's like by now. But they have these little plastic pegs that allow you to peg into the head so that when you put it in the tray, his head doesn't roll around, which I think, did Krillin have these as well?
He might have. I remember Krillin had something funny about his head.
I think they're kind of baldists. They don't make trays for bald people. Their heads just roll.
Baldist.
So these little plastic pieces that you slide into what's actually a different hole in the head than the ball joint. I actually, on some, have had more trouble getting in and out than the actual head itself. But once I sort of have done it a few times over, they've loosened up and become much easier.
Yeah, I found them a bugger. I got every other head, but the originally equipped head, so the head that's originally on the figure, I can get the thing back in properly, and the one that's originally on the figure doesn't seem to want to go back on properly, and I'm not in any particular mood to try and force the issue. So I'm just kind of leaving that one, and it'll just kind of sit there and be a bit awkward for the time being. So I have the very open, shouty mouth, looking straight ahead, head equipped for mine at the moment.
Oh, that was the one I had on.
Yeah.
I literally just swapped it when you asked about the head swapping, but I've had that one on.
Yeah. I think it's probably the best one for a lot of posing in terms of action poses with Nappa.
I do really, so for those wondering, the different heads are, there's one with a communicator scout visor, which was that the one that originally came with?
That's not the one that it starts off equipped with.
Was it the smile?
The kind of smirky, evil smirk, no scouter is what he starts with.
Yeah, and he's sort of doing the rock eyebrow. Do you smell?
Yeah.
It's cooking sort of eye one, and then there's the sort of screaming looking front on, and then there's the screaming looking to the side with one eyebrow more slightly raised, which is that the
screaming going on?
Yeah, is that the power level 9000?
Yeah, it probably is. I'm trying to remember if it's that or there's another time where
or when Goku
gets attacked from the side by someone.
Could be, but yeah, that's the one I've seen a lot of people using in their posing because it's a very iconic Nappa expression.
Mm.
Now, I'm really fond of Nappa with the scouted gut, though, and this comes from my personal Dragon Ball Z nostalgia, where one of the figures I was actually super excited to get back in the old Erwin days was Nappa. And he, like Raditz, had the removable scouter, which at that point, and if you remember when I talked about the Dragon Ball Z vintage stuff on another episode, like these figures had 2 points of articulation early on. So getting things like removable scouters and that back then in the day was super exciting. So I was very fond of that. So I have a soft spot for Nappa with a scouter.
Yep. And I guess the other thing is if you're going to put Nappa with his smell my fingers hand gesture, he needs to have the scouter on for that to be accurate per the series.
Which I do have the smell my fingers. <and on>, yeah. Which if you've seen the show, you know exactly what the fingers are and the controlling of that key blast. But if you haven't seen the show, they are some of the dirtiest accessories you could.
Yeah. And there's been numerous people have posted pictures of their finger or their figure holding their fingers in front of the faces of other fingers. Figures. Let's not say fingers and figures at the same time too often.
Yeah.
It's just too hard. So that's I think that's actually a really great swap out hand as well, because it's one that they probably could have easily overlooked and just said, they'll use another hand for that or something, but they didn't, which was cool.
It's one of the things I really like about the line where it's like, okay, we're clearly doing this for this character. It's something that the fans definitely know about and gonna love and might not have been missed if they didn't include it, but the fact that they included it makes it something very special.
Yep, agreed. I mean, similarly, like the choice of effect parts, so you've got an energy blast that comes with it. They've really only got two choices with Nappa. One is his eraser cannon, I think it is, from the mouth, and the other one is his thrown key blast, is when he tosses that at Gohan or someone. And so it's basically just a key blast with a curved tail, which is really cool. The hands are provided for the same attack. So it all works really well. And it's actually one of those you can produce the right pose if you get it in the right time sequence as to when the key blast has been thrown.
Yeah, I really struggled to pose in with the key blast and get a good looking example, because it kind of just always looks like he's gone a bit limp with the key blast, or the key blast is shooting off to the side. It's very hard to create the effect that he's kind of controlling the key blast with his fingers.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that's just my inadequacies as a poser. That's not a fault of the figure.
I mean, this one, the correct hand for that is the kind of open but clenched over knuckles, not the smell my fingers hand. So
that's probably what I'm doing wrong then.
Yeah, so correct hand, it looks okay. I'm trying to think what else. So when there's a selection of hands, there's punchy hands, which is not surprising. There's smell my fingers hand. There's grappling / key blast type hands. And there's kind of a kung fu grip, karate chop looking hands as well. So there's a few options there, which is kind of cool as well.
Now, one thing I like, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, but in his paint color scheme, so they've gone with, I'm assuming this is the manga coloring.
Typically is first time out, yeah.
So it was also, he did appear in the very first scene with Vegeta in this coloring in the anime, which is kind of a black and brown. But in the bulk of the series, he actually had a blue and yellow Saiyan armor in the anime. And in the sort of black coloring, it is actually sort of a very dark blue when you catch it in the right light, which I don't know, on the body, that is. It's not so much the arms or the legs, but I don't know if that was intentional or it's just the black paint is slightly lighter or that. But if it was, it was a nice little nod having a little bit of blue in there in the black.
Yeah, I can just see what you mean. Yeah, so, I mean, the other thing is when Eddie says blue and yellow, I mean, it's really the blue is the highlight color for the black.
Mm.
So it was still black, but it was less brown and more the goldy, yellowy Saiyan armor color, the same as Vegeta had, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the brown is very similar to what is more or less the correct brown for Frieza's space pod. I'm pretty sure so for Figurized Mechanics, if you don't paint the Frieza space pod, it's kind of the same yellow as the Vegeta armor color. Whereas from the shots, if you go and look at shots from the show, it's actually the same color as this, or more or less the same color as this brown instead of the yellow on Frieza's hover pod. So that's kind of cool as well.
Nice.
Other than that, we haven't really talked about price yet. So I paid, I think, about $75 US for this. I'm not sure what yours was, Eddie.
So mine was around $90 Australian, but I got mine from Amazon. So there was another $10 on top of that in terms of getting him shipped out. So it was around $100 for me to get mine, but I was happy to pay that because I actually found him in store originally at a place that was having 20% off, and he, with the 20% off, he came to $160, and oof. I was like, oh, great. I'm kind of tempted just because I have a feeling this guy's going to be super rare and he's here in hand. But I thought, oh, no, you know what, I'm going to have a bit of a search around online while I stand here in the store, which is kind of a horrible thing to do, but when we're talking these prices, I did it and then saw on Amazon, like the eBay prices weren't too different from the store. But once I saw him on Amazon for that price, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to order him here and be done. So he's actually, by a fair leap of thinking, him and Sal, I've pretty much paid the same for, but these two are a fair jump, the most expensive figure arts that I've purchased. But as I said, I got a lot of nostalgia for Nappa. The Saiyan Saga is still my favorite saga. So
there's more than one saga?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's many sagas.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say, I think that I know nothing about this character, but I think he looks amazing.
Really, you've got to admire his confidence to get up every day and dress like that and, you know, just get out there. Yeah. it's a credit to him. It really is.
It is a credit to him, absolutely. Cool. Well, is that would that be a fair summary of the qualities of this particular figure?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Do you have anything left?
No, I think I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as I mentioned before, we sort of skipped the packaging and bits and pieces like that. But if you've heard Adam talk about these figures before, that's covered. And it is that new style of packaging. But apart from that, it's fairly much the same as we've gotten in other figures recently. So what about Dolly power ratings on this guy? I'll step up. Despite his flaws, I do really like him just because of the bulk and the weight and sort of that, as I say, sometimes the hand feel. So I'd probably have to give him a 7.5 dollies out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, the only real letdown, I didn't have any real issues with the paint, and it's really just that shoulder is what lets him down. The shoulder, I guess, the neck a little bit. Everything else is entirely fine as far as I'm concerned.
And it is one of those ones where I got a lot of sympathy for the sculptors, because as much as he does have some weaker points with articulation, because of the armor that he wears being so impractical, it's hard to work around those. It's more just they're working with the design that they have in a lot of those cases.
Yep, agreed.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for that, guys. So it was a very enjoyable double-teaming review. We will take a short break and be back with our final toy of the week and the wrap-up of the show.
Yahoo, it's me, Beetlejuice.
Joe Adam,
check out my great new house, The Vanishing Doll.
Scary.
Each sold separately.
Just lie down inside and say,
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Even smile, I'm scary.
Boom. Now, back to normal.
Beetlejuice.
Like it?
Makes my head spin.
Speaking of spins, let's take one of my awesome Phantom Flyer. A real scare on wheels. Great for on the ground or in the air frights. Pop wheelies. Give old Thor a lift. Am I the ghost with the most or what?
And last but certainly not least, unfortunately, he is going to kill the theme of bald-headed action figures that we had going for today. We have Scott, our final toy of the week.
I didn't get the memo. What could I have done instead? I don't think I have anything bald to review. It's very sad. Wow. Okay. Well, now that I'm, you know, deflated and dismayed, the item that I'm reviewing tonight is the deluxe Harley Quinn bombshell statue from DC Collectibles. Now, avid viewers, or viewers, hello, listeners, would know that I'm a really keen collector of the Bombshell line, but that I don't have the original Bombshell Harley statue for two reasons. One, because early on I wasn't really clear that I was going to want to be completist in this line, and then by the time I did think, oh, I should probably have this just to have it, that Harley, original Harley statue has gone up quite significantly in the secondary market. But B, I was not really a fan of that original piece because I had just a bit of an issue with design, because basically she was sculpted with her right eye kind of covered quite a bit by her hair, and then her left eye in a wink, and it looked really unnatural and weird, and I just didn't really like it. So I held out. Now, in the meantime, this deluxe Harley Quinn is actually the fifth Harley Bombshell statue, because yeah, I know. So there's two different versions of the original. There's the original one, and then there's a Christmas one. I know. There's some weird Halloween. There's a Halloween Batgirl, a Christmas Wonder Woman, and if you're desperate, you can always find those on sale everywhere because I think everyone thought they were dumb. And then of the Harley and Joker statues, there are two versions of that. And so the Harley that I did have before this was the Harley and Joker, the first edition one. And then this is the so the fifth Harley piece and the first solo Harley that I own. Tim Miller was the original sculptor on this line. These are all, of course, based on pinup art of the DC Ladies by Aunt Lucia in a kind of 40s, 50s style. And the Bombshells have taken on a life of their own, from statues to comics to action figures to minifigures to other statue series from other companies based on the Bombshells. It's kind of wackadoodle. But I'm just sticking to the original Bombshells. And this one is deluxe because this is Harley on more of a diorama base, and basically the design is that she, as you do, is riding a rocket in the sky, which doesn't feel like, you know, a super safe exercise, but then she's not all there, is she? So Tim Miller, as I mentioned, was the original sculptor on these pieces. He's kind of gone off to other things, I think, but he is the credited sculptor for this piece. And it is still the same, like the original Bombshell Harley design, just with a different pose, etc. So she's kind of, you know, like a bomber jacketed stripper, basically, I guess. I don't really know how else to
describe. That's just beautiful.
Bomber sure.
Jacket stripper.
Yeah.
That's my new band name.
Actually, that sounds like one of those things, you know, on Facebook where they're like, you know, take the first letter of your first name and the first letter of your last name, and then when you get, you're like, oh, I'm Bomber Jacket Stripper. Yeah. Look, this is great fun. This is just to kind of talk a little bit about the design. So she's cleverly packaged, so the box actually is not a significantly bigger box than your non-deluxe Bombshells. She comes in a few pieces. So the base, first of all, which is the rocket, and the rocket base actually has got the little leash, I guess, that she's holding on to attach, and her right hand attached. So when you take it out of the box, you look at it for a moment and go, oh no, my statue is broken, did. There is a loose hand in here, but no, that's actually by design. And so it's her right hand and kind of forearm, which then attach to the rest of the body via a magnet, which I think is actually quite clever. And then the rest of Harley is another piece. The design of this is really fun. The construction of it is very clever. I think, again, one of the things I'm really fascinated by always with this series is the challenge for the sculptor of taking, you know, a 2D drawing and turning it into a 3D piece, because, you know, it has to stand up properly. It has to be able to be viewed from different angles and make sense, etc. And I think that Tim Miller and the other sculptors that have worked on this line have always done, you know, a really fantastic job of interpreting the artwork. And I've got no idea whether there's much collaboration, you know, along the way, or whether it's done kind of in isolation and then it's just the sculptor's job to make it work. But I can imagine that it has its challenges. The base of this has got some clear resin being used for clouds that are the rocket is kind of soaring through, but then kind of form the base so that the rocket can be at that an angle that looks like it's actually heading down towards the ground. The rocket itself is really fun to look at. It's got some crazy little effects on it. It's got a Gotham or Bust logo on the side with a bunch of little bat, like, you know how on the kind of World War II fighter jets, they'd have little insignias for the number of enemy planes that they shot down. And she's got five little Batman symbols on her rocket, which is really clever. There's like some little packing stickers or, you know, postage stamp kind of things on one side of this, you know, like it's been places. And then some extra little cloud bits, you know, just showing that this is heading down towards the ground on the back again in that translucent material. The front of the rocket is painted with a kind of angry looking face, which is really cute. And then there's actually the idea of the thing that she is using to hold onto the rocket, which is a string, is being held onto the rocket by a little batarang. So, you know, very, very cute. Harley's held onto the rocket by two metal spikes in her left foot that fit in very nicely. And then her right foot is just leaning against the back of the rocket, but there's no peg or anything in that. But this is really, you know, nicely balanced, definitely not in any danger of toppling. And one of the things that I really like about this design is just, I think, the work that's been done on the aerodynamics of it in terms of, okay, like, you know, she's heading down towards the ground. What would that look like? You know, the back of her jacket is flipped up a little bit. You know, her hair is obviously kind of, you know, flying in the wind, and she's got her pigtails, which are sculpted in the kind of cold cast polystone, but then she's got a couple of ringlets of hair on either side of her face that are done in a softer material. And so, you know, they look like quite breakable pieces, and I wouldn't want to kind of put them to the test, but they definitely, you know, have a softer feel to them, so they're not as in danger of just kind of snapping off. As always with these pieces, one of the things that the bombshells all seem to kind of get is the deluxe treatment in terms of, you know, detail in sculpt, paint, extras, etc. So, you know, we've got the little the string leash, you know, we've got then on her, in her left hand, she's holding a nasty big gun, and I didn't actually get a good photo of this, so you can kind of see it in the main photo, but hanging off the gun is like a little Batman keychain that is painted. You know, it's just insane, the details on this that are just, you know, so clever, that often would get left out in stuff. She's got a playing card tucked into her you know, big long stripper stockings. Her bomber jacket has got the kind of fluffy collar and the sculpting on that that's been done. The level of detail is really amazing. Paint wise, I really love this. I'm going to get to a little bit of a but in a moment. But the paint wise, I really cannot fault this. It's interesting. I just saw the Vixen Bombshell statue has come out, and I have to say that there's something about the color. I don't think it's the concept. I think it's the color scheme that just does not quite work for me. But I've seen it in two different stores now with absolutely shocking paint issues on the face.
Oh.
Like kind of almost looking cross-eyed, but then just kind of some white on – I don't know. It doesn't so I'm definitely going to have to hunt that down. But I also feel like it's probably not going anywhere in a hurry, and
yeah,
you'd be pretty safe to wait for a sale. I don't know. It's just something about the color scheme that I just feel like they've missed the boat there. But anyway, you know, but this is just spot on. The paint is really fantastic. Her eyes are both open, which obviously is a big plus for me, and she's kind of got that crazy-eyed look. The one little niggle is that in all of the kind of trajectory and angling, etc., when I look at her face and just her eyeline, it's hard to kind of tell what she's actually looking at, and it more just looks like she's looking at nothing. And I know I'm picky about this stuff, but I'm always thinking about how am I going to display this and what angle, and you can see her face nicely, etc., but she doesn't kind of look like she's just kind of going woohoo looking. She looks like she should be looking at something, but I don't know. I suppose if you were kind of riding a rocket, then you're probably not in a clear state of mind, and maybe you should look coked out or something. I'm not sure, but if that was the effect, it's been achieved. I didn't mention as well just a couple of other really beautiful details. She's got same as the original. There's a Joker decal on her the back of her jacket, which is really groovy. And then she's got like a medal on the jacket as well, which is sculpted, painted, just amazing detail. This is obviously more expensive than your standard Bombshell, so I think you could be looking kind of in the 250, 260 Australian range, and I think kind of at the 190, 200 US. So definitely a bit of a bigger investment. But Harley, is that phenomenon that she's not my personal favorite character, but she's got this amazing following all of her own. Mm. And then the Bombshell Harley again has got this amazing following. And so I suppose that we'll keep seeing, Harley statues as long as, they keep happening. So I would say Dolly wise, to me, this is a,
Gesundheit.
I'm so sad for whatever just fell over. was that your hip coming apart again, Annie? Dolly rating wise, I would go 9.5 out of 10. I think just the little where are the eyes looking. I'm picky about these things; it bothers me. But otherwise, I really think that this is a fantastic piece. It's a great addition to the collection, and I do really like it.
Sweet.
Very nice.
Cool.
Well, that's it, guys. That's the last review, and that's all we've got. So thank you again for joining us here for another episode.
Hooray.
Yay. Hooray.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Cheerio.
Bye.
Good night, nerds.
The Action Figure Blues podcast can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and can be downloaded direct from actionfigureblues.com. Wherever you listen, please take a moment to leave a positive rating and review to help others find our show. Our theme music is by Robert Crandall. Our ad music is by Scott Holmes. The AFB logo is created by Nath Stones. We also have an active fan forum at afbforum.com where you can join with all the hosts of the podcast and many other collectors to discuss news, reviews, old lines, and trade and sell in a safe community. Please join us there. While you're at actionfigureblues.com, please check out our sponsors like Mike's Comics and Stuff, Loot Crate, Audible, and Gamefly. You can find us on Twitter at AFBlues, on Instagram at ActionFigureBlues, and on Facebook at facebook.com/ActionFigureBlues. Thanks for listening!
Five, four, three. You're listening to Action Figure Blues podcast episode.
No, fail, blah. So we're going to do the... Remember, we're going to do the intro when Adam comes.
Ah, yes, sir.
Yeah, so right now you're just introducing Ben's Toy of the Week.
Sorry, old habits die hard.
A plus for enthusiasm.
I was like, did we change the name of the show? What's going on?